Welcome to Voting Matters, a series of conversations about the voting process from WUKY and the League of Women Voters. Now, here's your co-hosts, Liza Holland, president of the Lexington chapter of LWV, and WUKY's Alan Lytle.
Welcome once again to Voting Matters. Hello again, Liza.
Hello, Alan. So great to be back.
Well, let's talk about some things that are going on with the league right now. We're talking about in April and May.
Well, we are ramping everything up for the primary that's coming up in May. We've got candidate forums that you can now see on our YouTube channel and look for them on social media. There will be more to come, but the first batch are done, which is exciting. It's always very refreshing to hear local candidates in particular, because that's really where a lot of the work gets done. We're also going to have a meet and greet with at the end of this month. I think it's the 29th with Civic Lex to be able to meet those candidates in person. So invite everybody to come.
And where is that one going to be?
That one's going to be at Henry Clay High School from 6 to 8.
Very cool. And yes, we're coming up on elections May 19th. Now, not everybody can vote unless they are a member of a certain party, or if we're talking about nonpartisan elections.
You know, that brings up an important part. Kentucky's one of only, I think, 8 states that has closed primaries. So people who are registered independent or other are not able to vote for any of the partisan races. You are able to vote for nonpartisan races, but it's too bad, because we should really find a way to enfranchise the rest of those voters.
And I think there's a growing importance there, and maybe a groundswell, let's hope, of maybe opening those.
Well, you know, even here in Kentucky, it's the fastest growing part of our voting population. So Michael Adams, our wonderful Secretary of State, has kind of come forward to say that maybe we really need to address this, and I am all for it.
Now, another part of our podcast is about the civic process and how to participate. And we get a lot of questions about zoning and planning and things of that nature. So who do we have today?
I am so excited to have Jim Duncan with us today from LFUCG Planning Department. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, it is awesome to have you. I intend to learn a lot during our discussion here. So let's kick off just saying, you know, for listeners that are new to the idea, what exactly does city planning mean?
It means a variety of things, but most importantly, it means an opportunity for the community to have an important say in how Lexington grows and prospers in the years to come. So planning is really all about what do we want our city to look like, and how do we get there? And that very often reveals itself in the built environment, from the transportation network to the shopping centers to the places where we live and where we go to school. And all of that comes out through the planning process.
That's a tall order. It sounds like you've got a lot on your plate. What is kind of a day-to-day in the planning world look like for you?
Well, we try to divide these tasks and make sure that we can address them appropriately. In the Division of Planning, which is part of the Lexington Fayetteville County Government, we have 4 different sections. And one of them is the familiar planning services section that deals with the zoning applications and subdivisions and that sort of thing that people see sort of on the ground. They get letters in the mail about, and they can participate in those hearings. We also have a long-range planning section, and that's the one that really makes the plans for Lexington, the comprehensive plan, corridor studies, small area plans, those kinds of things come out of that long-range process. We have a transportation planning section. Now, these are not engineers. They don't build roads, but they look for the transportation system of the future, thinking about how we move through the community in both vehicles and in bicycles and pedestrians and other ways. It's also part of the federal metropolitan planning organization, how we are federally funded with transportation, the federal transportation dollars. So that flows through our transportation planning section. And then finally, we have an outreach and strategic planning section, and that's really the one that's kind of new to us, and we're hoping that that can help bring more people into the planning realm. We want that to be a way that we can go into the community, into the neighborhoods, into the churches, and to talk about what planning is and get people involved so that they are helping to shape the future through the plan process and not just reacting when a zone change or something like that comes their way.
Well, that's exciting. It sounds like very good timing for all of that and for this particular conversation.
Yeah, when we're talking about planning, and you said about the comprehensive plan, where are we with that right now?
Well, the comprehensive plan, it is a best practice activity, but it is also a requirement under state statute in Kentucky. So that is one of the progressive elements of planning out of the legislature. And we have to update it every 5 years. So our last update was in 2023. So we're about mid-cycle right now. And that gives us a short window to really implement the tasks that were identified in the last plan. And then we'll be looking to update the plan again in 2028 and then refresh it for the next 5 years.
Wow. And the zoning, when somebody says, oh, we need a zone change in order for this to happen, take us through that process.
Well, zoning is what we are allowed to have if we have a comprehensive plan. So that's the way the legislature set this up. You have to have a planning process, and then you can have the regulations to support that. And it really does to implement the plan. The zoning is an element of that. The zoning ordinance is a regulation that is passed by the Urban County Council. So it is the planning law of Lexington. And it lays out how land is used, whether it's residential, commercial, industrial. More often we're seeing a mixed-use type of land where we have a higher density residential, but then also we incorporate some commercial and work opportunities in there. And so the zoning ordinance lays out all of the rules and regulations associated with that, what you can do, how big your building must be by a minimum size, or how big it can be on a maximum size. And all those regulations are available to anyone who is looking to develop or to use the land in Lexington.
You know, that sounds a little bit intimidating with the levels of rules and regulations and whatnot. What do you think for an average person in Lexington? What does all of this planning and zoning affect? How does that affect your real life?
The whole underpinning of planning, and this is nationwide, is to ensure that the community lives in a safe, healthy environment. And that's really the purpose of planning, is to ensure that we don't approve and locate land uses that are going to be incompatible with something else. So very often you'll see industrial uses isolated in one area because of truck traffic, and even years ago just because of the noise or the emissions from industrial. So you wanted to separate those from residential. But more and more we're wanting to see how do we integrate residence and commercial and even work type land uses so that people don't have to drive always. They can interact more with each other, create more of a kind of an 18-hour space rather than just 8 hours at work and 8 hours at home and then shopping. Moreover, we're seeing how we're trying to make our land use work for all needs in a way that we don't always have to rely on the car and that we can interact with each other in better ways.
You know, it's interesting. That actually kind of takes us back in a way. I had the honor of being able to live in Dublin for a little while, which is a pretty big city. But it is totally made up of all of these small communities that you just go from one to the other, but they all have their own kind of separate identities. But it allows for some really great community. I love that we're leaning that way.
Yes, it does. And that's really what we need is, you know, to be lifting each other up, supporting each other. And if we design our built environment in the right way with infrastructure and with residences and other buildings, then we come much closer to achieving that.
And with these conflicting needs and desires, how in the world did you make everybody happy?
Oh, we have yet to do that. And we take solace sometimes because we hear from some people who want to make us feel better, say, well, if no one's happy, then probably you've done the right thing. But you know, that's hard in the moment. We work with community volunteers on the Planning Commission and the Board of Adjustment. And they take a lot of heat from at public hearings if there is something that's being proposed that's unpopular in the neighborhood or controversial. And that's a lot to ask of our citizens. And so we try to help the Planning Commission, Board of Adjustment, even the Council through these with as much information as we can. And that's really the best thing, and that is to understand why we're doing this, what our options are, what our limitations are, and then to try to work together to make sure we understand.
What do you think are some of the most challenging trade-offs when you get into these conversations? Because obviously each party has conflicting interests and desires. Where do you find the biggest challenges?
We have a number of those. I would say certainly we've seen over the past 20 years in the profession the conflict with the environment, especially developing new land. If you're going in some place that had previously been serving an environmental purpose and now you're putting in buildings and hardscape, that changes things. And so that's a concern. And then ensuring that we replace the environment when we're able to, you know, we add trees, that we ensure that the stormwater infrastructure is adequate so that we're not causing other people problems. So that is a continuing challenge. And then certainly we have seen over the past 10 to 12 years the challenges of housing and the need to provide housing for workforce, for low-income households, and certainly the demand for people who have lots of options for housing. And how do we put all of those in the same place in a community that is very desirable? People want to be here, and then that puts pressure on prices, and so things are going up. And that really is a challenge, and we continue to work on that, but that absolutely takes a partnership amongst the several governments of philanthropy, of development community, all working together for that.
Yeah, I understand that you've got some kind of public-private partnerships that are going on. I believe there's one up on kind of the end of Georgetown Road here. I guess it's actually now on Newtown, but I heard that there was a pretty successful lower-income housing development made possible by the city.
Yes.
Were you all involved in that?
Yes. There's one on 4th Street that you may be talking about. I think one of the most interesting public-private partnerships is still getting worked out, and that's the redevelopment of the Transylvania baseball fields off Paris Pike. And that is going to be mixed housing for low-income households, but for all ages, for households with children, for older households. And that was an excellent public-private partnership that involved the local banks, involved the Kentucky Housing Authority, and certainly the local government working together, plus Transylvania University. That's going to be a great project.
Exciting to see.
So you've got all of these different partners all coming together and trying to reach a consensus for the public good. I mean, how large is your department, you know, handling these situations as they crop up?
Well, we have 36 people in the Division of Planning, but it's still definitely a partnership with other aspects of government. We work with engineering and with traffic engineering and with water quality and all of the folks that make the city work on a day-to-day basis. So it's very much a citywide effort to make sure that we're doing development that's efficient and cost-worthy for the city, but that also meets the needs of the community.
A question about the Board of Adjustment, because one that's recently made headlines, of course, is that the rehab facility on Duke Road. Can you take us through that and what they were tasked with doing?
Yes. So the Board of Adjustment is a volunteer group of people that are appointed by the mayor, confirmed by the council, and it exists because of statute, and they are charged with looking at exceptions to the ordinance. So they look at anything that might need to be varied from the rules. They also, in the case of the Duke Road application, they get to look at conditional uses. So in the case of the Duke Road property, it's a residential zone, which means by right, any number of residences can be there up to a certain density. But under the right conditions, other uses could be there as well, including private schools, churches, daycare centers. and in this case, rehabilitation homes. So the board was tasked with looking at this site as a conditional use for a rehabilitation home. Now, what's different is that it had been previously approved for something similar, so the facility already exists. So they're not really looking at a new facility, but moving in a different kind of rehabilitation home. And as we do with all of our public hearings of this nature, we send notice and we publicize notice and word got out. And the neighborhood around there was very concerned. This would be something new introduced into their neighborhood, and they were concerned about the impact. And so they expressed their concern in writing to us, and they also attended the hearing and were able to speak and address their concerns to the Board of Adjustment, along with the applicant who spoke about the need and how they were going to operate the facility. So the board took those different points of view into consideration as they deliberated and made their decision.
And that's the way it's supposed to work.
That is the way it's supposed to work, yes. We can't make a rule for every type of land use that comes along and say that it can only be here and can only be there, because there's just too many different needs, and the circumstances may warrant that something can work in one place and not another. So the board is tasked with making that determination, and the staff recommended that we felt that would work in this location, and the board ultimately concurred.
And so who makes that final decision? Is it the board, or is it a referral to council?
No. In the case of the conditional uses with the Board of Adjustment, they are the final authority.
Okay. So these are volunteer citizens that are making up this board.
They are. Yes. They're a cross-section of the community, and they serve staggered terms so that they can all have different levels of experience. And they do their job very well, and they take a lot of heat. Sometimes the meetings are easy without a whole lot of controversy, but then there's always something that's going to cause people to be concerned, and the board's going to have to weigh all of that when they make their decision.
Well, that is quite a way for a citizen to step up and be involved. Tell us a little bit more about how the rest of the citizenry can get involved and tune in and be informed if they have an interest in these kind of areas.
The most important way to be involved is to actually be involved up front during the plan making process. So every 5 years when we update the comprehensive plan, we also do a robust public engagement through that. And that plan is adopted through several different public hearings as well, where people can attend. So that is the best opportunity to be involved, to engage with your council member who has a role in setting the goals of the comprehensive plan. Engage with the staff when they come into the community and talk about the planning process. And then have a role in what the rules are and how those get implemented. And then in between the big comprehensive plan, we have other small area plans and neighborhood plans where people who have something particular of concern can be involved. So that is the best way to be involved. But then also, we invite you to come to the public hearings when there is a specific element that may be of concern to you. And we think you should participate in those as well.
And I know you give notice, but there's a lot of us out there who are like, okay, well, but how do you get on that list to be notified? Or, where do I need to tune into to be able to know that these things are happening, especially today where we're overloaded with information?
Absolutely.
How can we find out about the planning?
Well, and certainly the individual applications like a zone change or conditional use, all are, we are required to send mailed notice. So people who live nearby, I will get notice about those. But as far as keeping up with the planning process, we encourage people to follow our website and follow us on social media as well. ImagineLexington.com is the comprehensive plan website. And that's the site where all the data is going to be kept up to date about our population projections and how our land is being used. And it's also going to list upcoming projects and engagement opportunities. And so we encourage people to follow us there, but they can also just anytime check in with the Division of Planning and see what's going on. And we'd be happy to direct you to one of the sources or just answer a question directly.
I love that. Imagine Lexington. That's an easy one to remember, right? That'd be .gov?
Yes.
ImagineLexington.gov.
Actually, in this case, it's ImagineLexington.com. We've tried to make it even easy,
okay.
even more accessible. So ImagineLexington.com.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, that's kind of a callback. Didn't we have Council Member Sheehan?
Yeah.
And she was here talking about Imagine Lexington mm-hmm. at that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Jim, you had mentioned about people being on the Board of Adjustment, and they volunteer for that. How do they volunteer?
Well, there is on the city's webpage, lexingtonky.gov, there is a boards and commissions tab, and people can go there and you can submit an application online, and those go to the mayor's office. They don't come to planning. We're not involved in making those decisions. That starts with the mayor. And she will review those applications. Her team will review those and see if there's a need to advance one of those, and then she forwards that to the Urban County Council, who then holds a hearing, a confirmation hearing for the Planning Commission and Board of Adjustment, and then it goes from there. But yes, LexingtonKY.gov Boards and Commissions tab, and that should move people on.
Yeah, reminder to everyone out there, there are so many boards and commissions that our city has for citizens to be able to get involved in. It's somewhere between 75 and 79. I keep getting disparate numbers there, but that's a lot of different boards and commissions where we're really reaching out and hoping that the city and its citizens will participate in the process.
Yeah, that's true, and I do believe that the Planning Commission and Board of Adjustment are among the most taxing, especially the Planning Commission. They actually meet every Thursday, and so that's a big commitment for somebody in the community to be able to give that kind of time. But we have an outstanding roster of Planning Commission members and Board of Adjustment members who are willing to give their time, do the work, show up at the neighborhood meetings, and then come in and make those decisions when they need to.
That's fantastic. Kudos to all of them.
Yes, indeed.
Kudos to all of them. As we look forward to kind of the future of Lexington, since you're on the leading edge of that, any thoughts or wishes for Lexington in, say, 10, 20 years from now?
You know, Lexington, I think, distinguishes itself, certainly in Kentucky and nationwide, in the way it grows. It has made a deliberate decision since 1958 to preserve its rural land through the urban service area, meaning that development then gets contained and doesn't sprawl out. And as a result, we have an unmatched rural service area of farmland that is renowned. And I think that is important for our cultural identity, certainly important for an economic development aspect of the community. But it's also important for economic efficiencies. Government needs to be compact, and it needs to be thoughtful and deliberate in how it provides its services. So when we think about building roads and maintaining roads, the more compact we can make that system, the better the transportation network works, the easier it is to clear roads when we need to during snow emergencies. Certainly makes it easier to provide pavement services. So part of what we're looking at is really just how do we ensure that we have efficiency in government, and that's expanding. And so being very cautious and deliberate, and we have been about expanding into the rural area to ensure that that we're preserving that, but then also preserving the efficiency of government. And then I think we need to be continually on the lookout for ways to improve the quality of life for people. And right now, one of the things we're working on is complete streets and Vision Zero policies that will make the road network, the transportation work network, much, much safer, with the goal of eliminating serious and fatal crashes in the very near future. And a lot of that, of course, comes down to how the individual behaves behind the wheel. But it also, to the extent that we can design the system to be safe and help ensure that when people make mistakes, that it doesn't become something much worse than it needs to be. So that's something that's on our plate right now for the future is ensuring that we have a transportation system that is safe for all users, people who are walking, biking, and driving as well.
And your job is made so much easier if people get involved. correct?
Absolutely. No, people, even if the getting involved just means understanding what we're doing, it doesn't mean that you have to commit to come to a meeting and fill out a survey, but just following along to know what's going on so that you can have a better understanding when something does happen, or that you can have an appreciation for why decisions were made. People being involved is a hallmark of planning, absolutely.
Yeah, right now there's this this move to maybe reimagine New Circle Road, and that is, I understand, is that the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet that is leading the way there?
It is, but that came out of the comprehensive plan. And so we are working as partners with the Transportation Cabinet, and they've been wonderful. They've hired a consultant and have some designs that are really meant to improve safety and operations of the New Circle Road area, especially on the north side where there's a lot of traffic. We intersect with the interstate there. So the idea is, how can we make this a safer road and still make it functional for the people who need to use it? And there's some really clever designs that I hope that we'll see implemented over the coming years.
And of course, neighborhoods, they want, if they don't have sidewalks already, they want sidewalks.
They do. They want them. They need them. And that's it. It is difficult to retrofit neighborhoods, which is why we're so insistent that new development include all of those facilities up front. But we do have a plan. It may take us a long time, but we do have a plan to go in and provide sidewalks where they don't exist now.
That's exciting. I tell you, next time you go off of the interchange at Leestown Road and get frustrated, know that we are really trying here to make it much safer and much easier for you to be able to navigate the roads here in Lexington.
That's right. We've seen the safety success of the double crossover at Harrodsburg. Road, and we hope to replicate that at Leestown Road too.
Can you tell us just shortly, because I've had numerous neighbors and whatnot say, what were they thinking with all of that? It seems too complicated for me.
Well, it is complicated, but it's also one of the more efficient ways to retrofit an intersection without tearing it down and starting all over again. So we can do the construction project faster and with less resources than we would if we were designing a contemporary interchange there. And these are tested interchanges, that the new design, the double crossover. The main thing is that it forces you to slow down and think about what you're doing. And if you're driving slower, you're much more likely to get through a situation without a bad outcome.
I love it.
Yeah, and what is the one thing that you wish every resident understood about planning?
Oh, I wish that they understood that we are implementing a vision for the community. That this isn't a vision of pointy heads in a corner office somewhere. That this is that what we have put together represents the voice of the community as a whole. We're bringing in what we believe are the best practice solutions that have been tested elsewhere, and introducing those to the community, and certainly getting their response to things that they have seen elsewhere, or tell us just how does something actually work on the ground where I live, because it's where I am is different than where somebody else is. And so I think the main thing we would like people to know is that this planning is a community outcome of people participating in the plan making process and participating in the rule making process, and then in the implementation of planning as well.
That's a good one all the way around. And, you know, I have learned a lot as far as the breadth and depth of planning today. Is there anything that we have not talked about that you think we ought to share?
I think planning continues to evolve. You know, when the profession was getting started around 100 years ago or so, particularly out of cities, there were strong beliefs in how communities should be organized, and we have seen the good and the bad in that, and where you build roads through the middle of town just to get traffic moving. Well, fortunately, Lexington didn't experience that. The plans were to bring the interstate through town, and that didn't happen, and we are far better off for that. Other communities have spent untold millions of dollars trying to fix that. So we've got so much going for us in Lexington already because our forebears made good decisions about planning. And that's our responsibility, is to continue to do that, to make good decisions for tomorrow. They may look a little challenging today, but as Wendell Berry said, you plant a tree today for the next generation. And that's, in many respects, that's what we're doing with planning. We certainly want to deal with the needs that we have right now, but thinking about these investments and how they will hold up over time and be good for the community as it continues to grow.
Wow. That is, I don't know how you were able to answer all of our questions like that, but Jim, but man, it's as if you were prepared for just about anything we might ask.
Well, I will tell you, I thoroughly enjoy my work, and I have a team behind me at the Division of Planning that is unmatched. And they challenge me every day, and so I try to keep up with them, and it's just a great set of people, and I believe that Lexington would generally agree that the outcomes are all meant to be in their favor.
Well, kudos to all of those people and your team. And thank you so very, very much for stopping by and giving us all this great information on voting matters.
I appreciate the interest. Thank you all.
Yeah, Jim, it was great to have you here. And one more time, Eliza, talk about some things that the league is going to be doing here in the next 4 to 6 weeks.
Oh, yes. You'll see us out doing a lot of additional voter registration. The deadline has passed for the primary, but continuing that work all the way through until the fall. We actually have a very interesting thing coming up for our international community and maybe our low voter turnout community. We're going to be doing a mock election so that people can walk through the process, and that'll be in June. We'll tell you a little bit more about that when it comes forward. But kudos to Susan Lamb and her team for being very involved with that. And of course, as I mentioned at the outset, it's candidate forum season for these primaries. So please, the best thing you can do is to be an incredibly knowledgeable voter. Know who these people are before you walk in and, hit the trigger. It's going to make our entire city and process so much stronger when you go in as an informed voter. And I guess I will give the shout out. We're going to be looking in May at doing some of, we're partnering with WKYT and the State League to do some of our federal races, and also a mayoral. So that'll happen beginning of May.
Wow. You talk about a crowded calendar, and
that is
definitely it.
We got a lot going on. Come and help us, anybody who wants to volunteer.
Yeah. And they can go to your website for that information?
Sure can. We're at lwvlexington.com. We did the same thing. We decided we wanted to make it as easy as possible for people.
All right. Well, Liza, Jim, thank you so much for today. And we're going to see you again very, very soon on Voting Matters.
You've been listening to Voting Matters, a podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the League of Women Voters. Subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts, or download Voting Matters from the podcast page at wuky.org. We also have links from the organizations and guests mentioned in this program. See you next time for Voting Matters.